This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
It is the August congressional recess, and we talked with U.S. Senator Ron Wyden this morning. Now we're talking to U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley this afternoon. Senator, thanks for being on with us.
You bet, Kyle. It's wonderful to be with you.
So a number of things to cover here in the time that we have. And, of course, really at the top of our news today locally is all the fires in the region here around southwest Oregon. And I wanted to kind of get start with your assessment of the fire situation for this summer.
Well, not good. You know, we had a fair amount of precipitation early. A lot of things grew. Now they're all dried out, and it's between the heat and how dry everything is. We're probably going to be in trouble for a couple more months here. It's a real indication of how we have to keep investing in forest management, try to reduce the vulnerability of our forest to fire.
So what can be done specifically to better manage the forest so we either have less fires or smaller ones?
Well, in my role as leading the Interior Committee in the Senate, I've been pressing for a lot more funds for forest management, and that means a lot more thinning, a lot more prescribed burns, a lot more mowing, and trying to get more of that done near our smaller towns. In other words, it's great to have it done 100 miles away from everything, but that's not going to endanger our towns. And as we saw after the 2020 Labor Day fires, you know, six Oregon towns burned to the ground, what we've seen in Hawaii, what we've seen in some of the other states, this is going to be an ongoing challenge. So we've gotten about a tenfold investment over the last few years, and it's something the rest of the nation doesn't really get because they don't really have forest fires like we do here in the western side of the country. But they're getting the smoke now, and that's helping to them to understand that we all have a stake in this. So that effort is a big one, but then also throw in the stewardship agreements and the landscape forest collaboratives, which we've gotten a doubling in the number across the country, but a number have added here in Oregon, where everyone comes together across the spectrum from the environmental side to the timber commercial side to say, hey, how can we take and timber this piece of land in a fashion that's good for the ecosystem, good for saw logs going to the local mill, puts people to work, and makes the forest more fire resilient. So that sort of collaborative wins on top of regular forest management, I think, is the way to go.
And for federal forest management in general, how do you think it can be done better?
Well, we just have to do a lot more of it. The amount of what we had done, we had just a very modest investment. We had a lot of timber sales held up in court. That's where the stewardship agreements and the collaboratives have helped to manage to get strategies in place and keep the logs flowing in a productive way. But the enhanced amount of actual funding for prescribed burns, for thinning, for mowing is probably the single most important thing.
And recently I went over to Central Oregon and taking the route from Roseburg over, periodically noticed areas there from some of the fires recently where you could just almost tell, you know, where the land boundaries were based on how the land had been dealt with after the fire. A lot of people feel like there's a lot of just leftover, non-taken care of issues on federal lands after some of these recent fires, including Archie Creek.
Yeah, the place that it's worked best has been along established roads where we've gotten more permission to do a lot more clearance along the roads. We've got a lot of burned timber down fast in that case. It gets a lot harder when you have to go off of established roads, and you know, 'cause there's always a debate about exactly what should be left. But I think that's been the biggest piece where we've gotten an increased consensus on how to deal after the fires. It's, you know, we have to realize this is just going to be an ongoing challenge. We do have climate change. We have more droughts. We have less groundwater. We have a longer summer. All of it piles up to let's keep taking the best lessons learned and apply them in a more determined and quantifiable fashion.
And aside from some of those debates, also health concerns from the smoke right now were moderate in Roseburg. But, for instance, Grants Pass currently is unhealthy for some sensitive folks. And we see over in the Willamette National Forest area, the air is just flat out unhealthy to breathe. And add in the recent extreme heat, that brings in additional issues regarding people's health.
Oh, it does, and I have been pushing for a couple different things. One was to get a center established at the University of Oregon that studies heat and smoke, so we can establish the record. We're trying to. That is now that we got that grant. That is, I just visited it. It's up and running. A second piece of this is to provide grants to communities to create safe air places so people who have asthma or difficulty with the smoke can go to a place and breathe clean air, help our schools put in filtering systems, this kind of impact. So I've got a couple bills designed to do this. One is the Smoke and Heat Safe Communities Act. Or Ready Community Act. And the second is one that gives the president the power to create a smoke emergency. In other words, recognizing it isn't just fires that do damage, it's also smoke that does damage.
What about, you mentioned schools, one of the concerns back in 2020 in particular when we were dealing with the aftermath of the Archie Creek situation was hot periods of time as school began where teachers wanted to open the doors, but that wasn't safe to do because of the smoke level outside. But so many of our schools are from the 60s, maybe the 70s. We've got a lot of schools that don't even have air conditioning systems or ones that are certainly not up to date. Should there be any initiative there to work on that issue?
Yes. The some parts of the state are, you know, generally warmer than others. I know there was never air conditioning in any of the schools I went to, but the heat is longer and going on into September. So it is a factor for the schools. I think as local school boards wrestle with this and propose that it becomes a significant factor in our children's education, it's one of many. It goes along with this question about how do you have air in the school that's smoke-free? Well, and now you've raised the second issue, and how do you make sure the temperatures aren't so high that the students can actually study? These things are expensive to address. I hope that if we start viewing smoke and heat nationally as an issue, we'll be able to get more grants to assist our school districts to deal with this issue.
We're going to cover a lot of different types of issues here during this time. Wanted to jump over to the fentanyl situation. It is certainly a growing problem in Oregon. How do we address the available supply and also help those addicted to substances of all kinds?
Well, if you'd asked me, Kyle, 2 or 3 years ago, it would have been about trying to stop the fentanyl coming from China. And we did, actually. There's virtually no fentanyl coming from China, but the precursors are going into Mexico, and now a lot of fentanyl is coming across the border from Mexico. Because such a tiny amount can do so much damage, it's a very easy thing to smuggle. So we have to keep tackling it in every way we can at the border. But we also have to tackle it by educating our children about the high risk. And Beaverton School Districts has a program that now is expanding throughout the state. It's called One Pill Can Kill, Fake is Fatal. And it's basically for people to understand, you might be buying, you know, our children might be buying some pill, and, you know, as much as we might coach them not to, they might be buying some pill anyway, and that pill could kill them. It could be something that's totally unrelated to being an opioid, but it might be contaminated with fentanyl. And a lot of the opiates sold on the street are definitely contaminated with fentanyl. And to just get a sense of this, like the amount of fentanyl you can put on the tip of a pencil can kill you. And so we're seeing a lot of deaths. So one is public education. One is interdicting the drugs, try to keep them from coming into the country. A third approach is to have Narcan widely distributed, so when people have an overdose, they can be addressed and perhaps save their lives. So these are some of the ways we can approach it.
What are your thoughts on the state of the U.S. economy? How are things doing? How do we improve things, and what's Congress's role in that?
Well, here in Oregon, we've been below 5% this year. And in fact, in early part of the year, we were just under 5% unemployment, and now we're about 3.5%. And every industry is looking for employees. The firefighters are looking for employees. The restaurants are looking for employees. The firefighting teams in the woods are looking for folks. And so in terms of employment opportunity, it's good. In terms of concerns about citizens, it's still a lot of, you know, there's a lot of pessimism and concern over inflation, the high price of housing, the high price of drugs. And housing or drugs are two things we can do a lot about. We can do a lot more on the housing front, in that we need to build a lot more housing designed for more moderate and lower income families, because a lot of the housing being built in our state is for higher end families who are migrating into the state. Well, we're 100,000 houses short. And so I applaud the state legislature for starting out by putting $200 million into housing with FIRST Act when they came in last January. But we also have to do more federal vouchers. And an initiative that I'm launching is to get the hedge funds out of the housing market, because the hedge funds, starting back in 2009, started buying up the nation's single-family housing and discovered that housing, which had been a huge source of wealth to middle-class Americans, is now a huge source of additional wealth for the billionaires who invest in hedge funds. So getting the hedge funds out of the housing business would be a new way to help with that challenge. And on drugs, we are just ripped off on the cost of drugs. We finally have a program to control the price of insulin, which is terrific, because that's a major set of drugs here in the United States that really taxes families' incomes. But we should be negotiating the price of every single drug. We have put more into the research and development for drugs than the taxpayers in any other country in the world. So we should get the best price among developed nations, not the worst.
What about rural Oregon? You and Senator Wyden both are in prominent positions in Congress. Is enough help going to rural areas of Oregon, or do you see situations where too much of the money is going to just the urban areas and the rural folks get left out?
Having lived in Roseburg when I was a little tyke, I really absorbed the concern over resources going to the urban areas. So one of the things I've been trying to do as a senator is to make sure that we get as much money as possible into our basic resource economies. There's a whole series of agricultural programs that I've been backing. I've gotten about $150 million into the state to help out our irrigation districts pipe water because, again, with drought, every drop of water is so precious. So you save a lot of water in piping compared to just a canal ditch. Proceeding to do more funding for our research communities on everything from berries and conifers to dry weed and grasslands in our grazing parts of our state. One of the things I've really pushed is the idea of mass timber to try to create a lot more market for our timber products. And really pleased to see that the D.R. Johnson was the first mill to really start producing mass timber in our state right there in Douglas County in Riddle. where my dad worked as a millwright, not at D.R. Johnson. He worked for Harbor Plywood, which is long gone. But that's a, you know, the some of the advantages of having members of Congress who were born into and kind of have a little more sense for rural parts of their state is an interest, and that's certainly an interest of mine, is to try to travel, is try to focus and get resources to our farming, our fishing, our ranching, and our forests.
In rural areas of Oregon, don't always have as good a level of internet and service as the urban areas, and given the importance of technology to every aspect of life, how do we address that?
Well, we did get in the infrastructure bill a massive investment nationally in broadband. And for Oregon, I think that number was almost $700 million, $689 million. The challenge with broadband is it's complicated to actually do projects. So my goal was to get the resources to Oregon, but now, how do we get the sort of expertise to plan and implement projects to utilize those resources effectively? And broadband is so much more complicated than, say, electrification was. And with electrification, we did rural districts. I wish we'd done it that way with broadband, but instead we have competition between different technologies, between for-profit companies, between local efforts. And if you do a local effort, but then a commercial company puts in broadband, are you going to have enough revenue to pay off the debt? You know, it gets messy. So getting as much expertise to our rural communities to help plan those broadband projects is really important. It's great to have $700 million coming from the feds for rural broadband, but let's make the best use of it. And one of my goals with rural Oregon also has been to accentuate community-initiated projects. For example, in Douglas County, in 2022 and 2023, there were a number of projects I was able to advocate for. I'm the only member of the Oregon delegation on the appropriation committees in either chamber. And one of those was for Southern Oregon Success. That was an $800,000, $840,000. One was for the Winston Area Community Partnership. Those were in FY22. In FY23, over $2 million to Adapt, Inc. for Regional Recovery Center, and that is related to substance abuse. And then onward with projects for Douglas County's radio system, Douglas County Sheriff's Office, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineer to dredge the Winchester Boat Bay. So it's just, again, back to your question about kind of focusing on rural Oregon, is trying to have my field team work with the local elected officials to say, what's your top priority? Can we find a pool of funds that might qualify for it? And then I'm going to lobby like hell to try to get those grants delivered.
You mentioned appropriations. Talk about your current committee assignments and how your placement in those can help the state.
Well, let's start with appropriations, because that is really important in two ways. One is my advocacy for community-initiated projects across the state. We have now over 300 projects in the last 2 years that have been funded. I've gotten 100 more through the Senate side for this year, this upcoming year of 2024, but we have to get the appropriation bills actually through the House and as well as the Senate before those will become real. And that will be a challenge. And then the second piece of that is I chair the Interior Committee, and I chose that Interior Funding Committee because BLM, we have so much BLM land, Bureau of Land Management. We have so much Forest Service. Of course, we have National Park. We have just a number of things that, where firefighting, for example, the funds that go into fighting fires are very much go through that committee. So advocating for Oregon's rural concerns, I couldn't be in a better position. I also serve on Public Works, and Public Works gave me a front row seat to work on a lot of the infrastructure efforts that are coming through for the state.
What kinds of things are you doing during this recess?
Well, the word recess might be the wrong word for it, but somehow in-state work period doesn't really roll off the tongue. I've been focusing on agricultural issues, and we have this program that Senator Wyden and I are doing called Bounty Counties to really focus on the different parts of ag and different parts of the state. And then looking at a number of the public health issues related to fentanyl and related to health care. So those are my focus here for August.
As we wrap up here, what are your priorities for the fall session of Congress?
Well, the biggest factor is trying to take the appropriation bills that we passed out of the Senate Appropriations Committee, suspending bills, and get them implemented. There's so many improvements, and realize, like, the Interior bill, which is often a very difficult bill, but I was working with my assistant chair or vice chair is from Alaska, Senator Murkowski. So we channeled that bill through the Senate Appropriations Committee with getting the vote of every single senator. So you have a tremendously bipartisan bill. How can we now get the House of Representatives to adopt the same bipartisan approach and get this bill funded, which will mean better funding for forest management, better funding for fighting fires, better funding for managing the BLM lands, and so forth. So that's really my big emphasis, is continuing the effort to get those bills done.
All right, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley out of time, but Senator, thanks for taking this segment with us.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, Kyle. Thanks so much.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.